what is your company doing to become more sustainable? Okay, I hate to say more sustainable because that's really a diffuse word. What does it really mean? How do you lower your energy consumption? How do you lower your water consumption? Well, you've got to make sure that you can still make money. So you have to consider the economics of this. But how can you be more efficient at what you do, but also the ingredients? A lot of ingredients, especially when we talk protein ingredients, the lion's share of the environmental footprint comes before the processing factory. It's either on the farm or in the fishery. So what are you doing to help your suppliers to become more sustainable or to reduce their impact?
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Bioregion, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research-driven. Pet approved.
Hello and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast, where our goal is to share new information to help the pet food industry continually innovate so we can support the health and well-being of pets and the humans that own them. I'm here today with Dr. Kurt Rosentrotter. Kurt is a professor in the Department of Agricultural and Biosystems Engineering and Food Science and Human Nutrition at Iowa State University. He is also a visiting professor at the Polytech Montpellier in Montpellier, France, and the ISARA Agripol in Lyon, France. He teaches courses and conducts research on bioprocessing, handling, storage, and preservation of cereal grains, oil seeds, and other biological materials. For over two decades, he has been working to improve the sustainability of biofuel, beverage, grain, feed, food, and agricultural-based systems. He has been developing sustainable, economical co-products and value-added materials such as enhanced feeds, foods, biofuels, bioplastics, biocomposites, industrial intermediates, and ingredients. A key component to these efforts is life cycle assessment and techno-economic analyses in order to understand and improve environmental impact as well as reduce costs for the industry. Welcome, Kurt.
Thank you so much. I really didn't think you would read the entire bio. That was a really long bio, but thank you very much for the introduction and your kind words. And it's a pleasure to be here and to share thoughts with you today.
Yeah, I'm really excited about our topic today. A lot of people like to talk about the different formats of food that are on the market. And when they come to me, they're talking to me about which one has the better nutritional quality. But of course, I think that there's trade-offs for everything. And so I love today's topic, and we're going to compare different formats of food, and we're going to talk about what is happening with processing techniques and where we're going in the future to improve the sustainability of each one of these processes. So Kurt, maybe just to get us started, can you dimensionalize some of the processes that you're going to describe to us today?
I'd be happy to. I think the first place I'd like to start talking about is the dry format, the traditional kibble type of approach, which the ingredients are processed through some type of an extrusion system where maybe they are coated after the drying step and before the packaging. That has been really common for a long time because of the convenience, but that's changing. And I think what's driving change is consumer preference in many instances. So I know when I teach students here in Iowa, one of the things that we do is give them the chance to formulate their own diets and then manufacture their own prototype food product, either for dogs, cats, or horses. And inevitably, the students want to choose either a mildly processed or a a refrigerated or frozen product. They are not that keen on extrusion anymore because it's got to be healthier because there's not heat damage. Well, maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But, you know, we also teach about how to do wet foods, the traditional canned type of food. And there are so many types of products in the marketplace. I think it's important that students know how to process all four types. And then there are treats, either the dried or the mildly processed treats. So in terms of everyone listening to the podcast, there are so many things to choose. And I think you and I were talking about trade-offs earlier today. There's no one size fits all for whatever application.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And while many individuals want to talk about it being either convenience or the nutritional value of the food, I think that we're seeing even more desire by the consumer for that information about considerations about the sustainability of the product. So when we put sustainability over top of these different formats, Kurt, and I think about this and then I start thinking about all the variables that must have to be considered for the life cycle analysis, I freely admit, I think that there is an insane number of variables that have to be considered for each one of these, from not only the sustainability of the ingredients you use, but what processes did those ingredients undergo before they came to you to be then used in a process of one of the multiple formats that are out there. So could you talk a little bit more maybe about, if you are brand new coming to the pet food industry and you really want a sustainability approach to lead your development, what should you be considering when you're looking at how these foods are processed?
That's a complicated question, Kate, and there's no answer. So I'll just share some random thoughts, because what I have observed over the years, if someone is entering the pet food space and they're going to develop novel products that aren't in the marketplace at the moment, oftentimes people decide, we're going to use this ingredient or that ingredient, because nobody else is in the marketplace using these types of ingredients, and we're going to be grain-free. Okay. I think one of the challenges when you ask the sustainability question, whatever the ingredient is not just the fact that you want to be grain-free. Should you be grain-free or not? Just because it's popular doesn't necessarily mean it's better for the animal or more sustainable. And so I think there are lots of different ways that we can look at the question about sustainability and ingredients, and part of which is, how are the ingredients grown or produced on the farm or in the fishery or in the ocean or, I hate to say, in the lab, but, you know, we do need to talk about upcoming technologies for the production of proteins. But then the supply chain, how does that ingredient, wherever the point of harvest is, what storage and preservation and transportation processes take that ingredient to your facility, wherever it's located? And then in terms of the processing, if you're talking extrusion processing, can you be successful in not breaking down the protein matrix and not impacting the digestibility? Sure you can. But you can also equally mess it up badly and make it really indigestible. So, the flip side is, should we do the mildly processed? There are questions regarding the food safety aspects, and water activity is a big point or a big leverage point for us in terms of preservation. But it's really interesting too, because we have colleagues who know that water sells, water is cheaper, and in terms of preservation, what's that maximum limit of water activity that we can actually meet without any problems with the food safety aspects? So it's always this trade-off. There's no simple answer. And then we can make it even more interesting and throw in the packaging side of things. So if you're using a kibble type of product or producing a kibble type of product, the packaging choices that you have will be different than if you're doing a mildly processed or a canned. And then we have to ask the question about the environmental impacts of the packaging, the sourcing, the manufacturing, transportation, and then end of life for that package. And we can make it even more complicated by talking about the PFAS chemicals. Many of our listeners might have heard of forever chemicals and how these have been used for a variety of reasons because they have functional attributes when you're talking about plastics. And so it's a complicated question. And I think for those that are just entering the industry, you've got a lot of choices to make.
And really need to think about those choices and how the consumer will interpret those choices. And then the longevity of making those choices as well. I think that's going to change, which really brings me to my next question, where we've focused a little bit here on dry and wet, and then lightly cooked. One area that I'm really interested in is a different process that can also be applied to foods is fermentation, as one example. So that's one that I am quite familiar with. But what are some of the changes in process that you see that are coming down the pike that the pet food industry should pay attention to, maybe, as potential alternatives, as you said, there's a lot of options in the pet food industry, and there's constantly these dynamic changes in the marketplace. But at one point, something is going to start to increase in demand, and another is going to go down. And I agree with you. I think our youngest generation is a bit more pessimistic about processed foods in general. And we need to be paying attention to that as well as we think about where this industry goes. So what's new with our existing processing techniques, and what is completely potentially new and disruptive for the industry?
This makes me very excited because I think there are a lot of different technologies and approaches that are based in what we currently do. Extrusion is one thing that continues to evolve. It's not just we install an extruder and then we have a dryer and then a coater and then a bagging setup. It's not just that, because I think what we're seeing with the extrusion industry is evolutions in terms of what we can do at the ejection point from the dies and the ability to control the density of the product or the solidification of the matrices as the kibbles form. I think that the porosity is something that they're also able to change rapidly. But I think even more so, the instrumentation and process control technologies that we see with extrusion systems are making the ability to make kibbles much more efficient than they were even 5 years ago. So I think if you're working in the extrusion space, pay attention to what's coming from some of the technology providers, because I think it's really exciting. And I don't want to talk about AI, but I think that will have an impact in terms of what we do with all of our processing operations. I think the other thing that really gets me excited is the packaging side of things. And this is across the board for all types of pet foods that are processed. So the modified atmosphere packaging, the things that we can do with the barrier properties in the plastics, but also in the paper as well. I think there are lots of evolutions that are happening. And I know the big push in the US, and I also believe in Canada, is the removal of the specifically PFAS family of chemicals, which depending on who you ask, is it 1,000 chemicals? Is it 4,000? Is it 8,000? The fact is that it's not exactly defined. What is the specific number of chemicals that fall into the PFAS category? And they've been used as plasticizers. They've been used for vapor barrier properties. There's reason why they were used in the first place, but to remove them and have the same functionality is not an easy task. And so I'm really excited to see how the evolutions are occurring in the packaging options that we have, because it's not just the manufacturing and the functionality of the package walls, but it's also then the end of life. So the ability to either compost or biodegrade is really important, but to do so without generating additional emissions. But then the manufacturing side upstream too, how do we manufacture these things without we need to be able to reduce our environmental impact on the manufacturing of the packaging side as well. So I think those are the two things that really excite me. When we talk about the mildly processed types of foods, I think there are a variety of new ingredients. And you're well aware of the ingredient approval process. We've talked about this before. I think there are so many ingredients in the pipeline that have potential for application in pet foods for a variety of reasons. Now, we do have the small issue at least in the United States, between the Food and Drug Administration and the Association of American Feed Control Officials. Folks that are listening, I'm not sure when this podcast will air, but hopefully we'll have a resolution sometime in the near future. But because I think there are a lot of ingredients in the pipeline that either have a health benefit or have a performance benefit depending on the type of animal that we're talking about. So the ingredient industry never ceases to amaze me in terms of new developments and new things. And I know you talked about your interest in fermented types of approaches. And, you know, sometimes they work out really well and sometimes they don't. And the example I am thinking is, I worked with a company a few years ago that was fermenting different types of grain and oilseed ingredients. And it really was interesting in terms of what they could accomplish with changing the amino acid profile and the amino acid digestibility. However, application in an extrusion system was not really good because of the way that the material, the way the ingredient matrix or the composition actually evolved in the barrel of the extruder made it really difficult to actually process, because the bonding would happen too rapidly. You don't want the bonding to happen near the feed of the extruder. You want it to happen near the die. And so fermenting ingredients will change the functionality of the proteins. And the objective is not to make plastic or glass, it's to actually make kibble. So
it requires a very good quality control. I always think about there was a craft beer company just here in Guelph who had a yeast overgrowth and never could not get control of it quick enough to salvage their product supply. And within a month went bankrupt because beer runs a short cycle, right? And Canadians really like beer. So then they started losing marketplace too. So there's that. But fermentation is finicky. But I would argue that actually all the processes we apply quite finicky, right?
Yeah.
what about then, you know, I remember years ago in pet food industry, there was an article about cold press. A couple years ago, there was one on sous vide as an example. Do you think that these are kind of trendy, kind of out of the kitchen, out of the chef's kind of perspective, more on that kind of culinary side rather than on the mass production side? Where do those fit?
That is such an interesting question, because if you talk to many of the companies that, especially the larger companies that produce a suite of products, what many of the folks tell me is, yes, grain-free and cold press and all of these other interesting approaches, we'll work in that space. There's a market for that. But we're also going to continue what we have done historically, low cost, effective pet foods made out of corn and corn byproducts and soy byproducts, because low cost will have a place in the marketplace and the high end will also have a place in the marketplace. And we're going to provide for all consumers who are willing to buy our products. So, which I really appreciate, because working in the grain processing industry, I think grain has a place. And I think if people just out of hand say, we will not consider grain because it's bad for the animals. Like, what do you mean it's bad for the animals? Tell me more.
I think that is a misinterpretation of people who don't fully understand it, the breadth of the ingredients. Exactly. But I would also say, as a nutritionist, that we have occasionally simplified our science to the point that we created some misinformation. I usually spend it's peppered among a lot of my lectures, but how students come in generally going, okay, so I look at my ingredient deck and I've got my protein ingredients, I've got my carb ingredients, I've got my fat ingredients. And you're like, but your carb ingredients have protein and fat, and maybe not, you know, oils are almost all lipid. So maybe take this one out a little bit. The oils and the fats are a unique ingredient, but yeah, all your other intact ingredients that haven't been fractionated, I'm using fractionated, which doesn't quite work with animal ingredients, but I think everybody knows what I mean. Exactly. You know, the hull is not the current is not the endosperm. The hull on one grain is not the same fibers as a hull on another grain. The endosperm is not the same. The protein and amino acid content of liver protein is different than muscle protein. Beef is different than lamb. I mean, it is so complex. And so trying to teach them that you really have to consider all of this when you're formulating is critical. And I'm not even a food scientist who will talk about all these physical characteristics that they have to consider to make sure it actually runs in whatever process they're designing. It's very complicated and needs a lot of experts at the table to get it right and to problem solve and really define. So I definitely appreciate that.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin NutriSurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way.
Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition. We partner with a purpose.
84 million times a day, pets eat meals with ingredients from Trow Nutrition. We bring together the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending to unleash possibilities for pet food brands. Premixes are just the start. Turn to Trow for higher inclusion ingredients too, like proteins and carbohydrates, and highly sensitive ingredients like probiotics. With our palatants and base blends, you can feel confident about what comes in our bags and goes in yours. Learn more at TrowNutritionPets.com.
Of all the advancements in the sustainability of processing or packaging that that you have seen and that you could talk about? I'm sure there's some things you can't talk about. Is there something in particular that excites you the most?
Oh, everything, to be honest. I guess that's the danger of being a scientist, is you get excited about important things, but also innocuous things. For example, I'm really excited. Okay, I'm not joking when I say this. There are so many ingredients that are coming into the marketplace, which is exciting. But what really I get interested in is, okay, what's the environmental footprint of this ingredient? And I know you and I have talked about life cycle assessments quite a bit over the past several years. But there are so many ingredients we just don't know. We don't know what is the carbon footprint, the acidification footprint, the ozone depletion footprint, the suite of environmental parameters that we need to understand. So to try to make a more sustainable pet food or a sustainable human food for that matter, we really need to understand, but there's such a lack of knowledge. There are some LCA studies that have been done. Okay, there have been a lot that have been done, but compared to the number of different food products and food ingredients, I mean, we're just scratching the surface. We have so much work to do. And I would argue that it's important not just to know the information, but companies and consumers want to know what is the carbon footprint. Granted, carbon is one of many things, but that seems to be in the discussion a lot lately because of the counting climate clock that we're facing and unfortunately will probably surpass. But there's so much work to do in this space. And so if you are a listener and you work at a company, what is your company doing to become more sustainable? Okay, I hate to say more sustainable because that's really a diffuse word. What does it really mean? How do you lower your energy consumption? How do you lower your water consumption? Well, you've got to make sure that you can still make money. So you have to consider the economics of this. But how can you be more efficient at what you do, but also the ingredients? A lot of ingredients, especially when we talk protein ingredients, the lion's share of the environmental footprint comes before the processing factory. It's either on the farm or in the fishery. So what are you doing to help your suppliers to become more sustainable or to reduce their impact? But you can't consider sustainability without also thinking about the social aspects too. So if you are working with suppliers, what does that mean in terms of their employees and their communities? And I think the social dimensions are still evolving in terms of how do we actually measure and quantify the social aspects of sustainability. It's relatively easy to quantify the economic aspects and then the environmental aspects too, even though it takes a lot of effort to do that. But the social aspects, I think, is an evolving science, and there's still a lot of work to do on the social dimension of environmental impacts.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you, Kurt. There was also, maybe for the listeners, we have had previous podcasts on packaging and the innovations that are being made to improve the sustainability of packaging. We have also had on the Pet Sustainability Coalition as well to talk about aspects of sustainability that should be considered. So there is a suite, shall we say, of some things that the listeners can go and listen to kind of further enhance this. And I really think that this needs to be an ongoing discussion embraced by not everybody on an individual basis. This is if there was a grand challenge posed to the industry, then the grand challenge is to make the entire industry more sustainable, because ethically, we all have a responsibility to try to improve life. And I would hope that we start doing this all together. So maybe that's my little plug for a kind of a group initiative to kind of look at this problem and come up with reasonable solutions. But thank you so much for everything that you shared. We already talked about you coming back again, that this is hot topic. We could dive so much further into aspects of processing and packaging and ingredients. I would love you and I to have maybe a good debate about, you know, how do we look at those ingredients? Is it on a per kilo? We talked about this before, and maybe get a few other people I know who have a pretty fervent opinion as well about how to move these forward. And you never know, maybe we should do some math live on the podcast just to freak some people out too. So that would be a lot of fun.
That would be great. And then we could introduce variability into the math.
Yes. And we could show a lot of people a lot of graphs. So the YouTube channel, I think a lot of people in the pet food industry would get mad at us because I've heard that they listen, they don't watch the YouTube. Uh-huh. So they'll put it on a second screen often. So we'll have to come up with catchy ways to get them to look at their screen for the YouTube shots. So, but it's a plan. I think it's a good challenge for us to figure out how to communicate that. So I look forward to that.
Me also.
Well, thank you, Kurt. It's been a pleasure as always, and I look forward to our next discussion.
Me too. Thank you so much, Kate. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent with APA Time Zone Hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.